In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hello, Dad. How you doing?
Hello, Tater. Good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. You got less teeth in your face now, right?
Yeah, I had to have a wisdom tooth cut out. I was having troubles with it. It was broken and infected and everything else, so they removed it from my face.
You lost some wisdom.
Yeah, well, I never really got the wisdom. I just got the bad tooth.
Maybe that was impacting your wisdom. Maybe...
You think?
Now you've gained wisdom by removing the tooth.
I think I just gained another hole in my head.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad you have a new hole in your head. I guess all things told, that it's a good net positive.
I'm glad I got a rotten tooth out because when you have fake joints like I do, two fake knees, and if you have an infection in your body, it can go straight to those joints. So that's something they really worry about when you have knee replacements or hip replacements is infections. So I had to get the tooth removed so I wouldn't ruin my knees, believe it or not.
That's really weird. That just gonna beeline for your knees. Wait, this guy's part metal. We got to get on that.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but they tried to explain it to me that something to do with the metal that when infection has that to go to, it will go to it.
Wow.
So I had to make sure that I didn't ruin my knees by getting my tooth taken care of. And that seems to make no sense, but that's the way it works.
Yeah, that's why we have doctors. I don't know.
That's right. So they can tell us all these scary things we have to worry about.
I don't know anything about that. Is today, yesterday was the first day of spring, right? It's spring.
Yesterday was the first full day of spring, yes.
First full day of spring, all right.
Yeah, it started somewhere in the middle of Monday and went full Tuesday.
So happy spring.
Spring has sprung.
It's here. I was thinking, because I saw a report of a single cherry blossom tree blooming. The weather's been all over the place, so it was like everybody was huddled under the single cherry blossom tree to try to enjoy the cherry blossoms. All the other trees are still asleep, or they died, or they bloomed too early. Who knows? But
well, now we saw quite a few in D.C. last weekend.
Oh, nice. So the D.C. trees are okay.
Yeah, about half of them were bloomed. The other half weren't.
That's good. The Brooklyn cherry blossoms have had a hard time. I don't know.
Yeah.
they have a hard time in general. It's hard to be a cherry blossom tree in Bushwick. But I was thinking, last year we did an episode. It was actually a listener request to talk about cherry blossom flavor. Remember that one, right?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Liqueurs and beers and all sorts of fun stuff. But, it occurred to me that we've never actually talked about one of the more, I'd say, essential cherry-flavored bar ingredients. One of my favorites, I was actually just kind of restocking some standards in my home bar the other day, and I was looking at the bottle. I was like, I don't know much about it, and we've definitely never talked about it in the cherry flavor family, and that is a cherry hearing.
Cherry hearing? I've heard of a red hearing. Is that the same thing?
Well, that's not... you've heard of something like... That vaguely sounds like that. cherry hearing, or it's labeled as hearing cherry liqueur, but I feel like, I don't know, from my first days in the bar up until now, everybody just calls it cherry hearing. So that's... If you've heard it referred to one of either way, that the label says hearing cherry liqueur, but we all call it cherry hearing. I don't know. It's an essential ingredient in some classics. It's been around for over two centuries, but I thought we could talk about what the hell is it?
Well, that's good, because when you brought it up, that was the first that I'd been hearing of it.
Oh.
I didn't have any idea what it was.
Hearing about cherry hearing.
Yeah. I had to have you spell it for me. I didn't know what we were saying here. That was my first thought when you said cherry hearing was red herring. So hopefully this isn't a red herring. It's an actual drink.
It is. Not that the name has caused some other confusion, which I'll get into it in the history because it is kind of funny. But just to start off with, what is it? Simply put, it is a Danish cherry liqueur. So it takes cherries, specifically Stevens cherries, that are a very dark varietal that grow wild in Denmark. They are crushed lightly and soaked in a neutral grain spirit. And a proprietary blend of spices. So there's a lot of kind of secrets to cherry hearing. We don't know exactly what's in it. It is then aged in casks for 3 to 5 years, and it is bottled at 24% ABV or 48 proof, so a little lower proof, but in the range of like most liqueurs. Mm-hmm. It's worth noting that, as I mentioned, the recipe is guarded. It does carry a nut allergy. So if you've got a nut allergy, just sorry, this episode isn't for you. Just jump ship right now before I talk about how delicious it is. You don't want to know what you're missing out on. No real understanding as to why. I have some thoughts on maybe why there's nuts involved, but it does list a nut allergy on its website. So good to know.
So don't drink it if you have a nut allergy, because you might swell up or something.
Yeah. Now, flavor-wise, it tastes to me what, like, Kid Taylor thought wine was going to taste like. I think that's a fair, like, rich...
Red wine, you mean?
Yeah, like exactly, yeah. Rich, sweet, fruity, spicy. Like, I thought it was going to be, like, liquid jam or something, you know? And then you drink it, and you're like, oh, no, this sucks. I love red wine now, but, you know, not when I was younger. It's really just that, like... rich, warm, fruity flavor. It's got a lovely viscosity that adds a nice body to drinks. You know, a lot of times when we're mixing with liqueurs, we will throw in simple syrup, not so much for the flavor or the sweetness, but for the texture that sugars in suspension give the drink. But cherry hearing is cool because it's just got such a nice, sweet viscosity to it that it adds body to the drink without having to add additional syrup. It does have those warm baking spices from that proprietary spice blend, and a really rich cherry flavor that tastes very fresh and natural because, well, it is. It's not medicinal or cloying, and it does have a touch of, like, natural tart acidity. So it does kind of have some balance to it that brings it up at the end. Color-wise, it's a really deep, rich, red, brownish color, and it's also natural. You can tell when you mix it, you know, when you mix with something that has red dye, like a Campari, which is nothing wrong with having a dye, plenty of liqueurs and spirits do, but like Campari stays red pretty much no matter what you do with it. You have to mix Campari pretty hard to get it to stop being red in a drink.
Red.
Yeah, like if you've got a good amount of Campari in your drink, that drink's gonna be red. Not so with cherry hearing. It pretty quickly, when you add some citrus or even like a base spirit, it starts to turn to like a rust brown color, and that's because the color is all derived naturally just from the soaking of the cherries. But that little bit of almond flavor, I do think is worth talking about, that little bit of nuttiness. And this is all speculation, it's all guarded, but I do wonder where the nut allergy comes from, because if you remember, Dad, I bet you remember this, when we talked about amaretto, how amaretto, which is almond flavored liqueur, oftentimes doesn't carry a nut allergy because it uses the pits of apricots or cherries to give you that almond flavor, because the flavor compound that when we taste it tastes like almonds exists inside of the pits of stone fruits. It's a very specific compound that can convert to cyanide in high levels if you consume a certain version of it. So I wonder if there's not some sort of like, I one of the things that makes cherry hearing unique is it's not bitter at all. It doesn't have any bitterness, and those pits while you will get that sort of almondy flavor, you'll also get some bitter notes from the pits of stone fruit. So I don't know, maybe if they're using almonds to give you the almondy note that comes from a cherry pit, but to avoid using like the crushing the cherry pit, you know, it is very softly like crushed to make the cherry hearing. So this is just speculation. I don't know. Maybe that's where it comes in. But I do think it's interesting to think about how we've learned there are some nut liqueurs that don't have nuts. And then there's cherry liqueur that does have nuts. And they all have the same flavor compound involved in them.
Well, you know, it's like they say, sometimes you feel like a nut and sometimes you don't.
Yeah. Well, and it is, it's one of those things that sets it apart from other cherry liqueurs too, because we've talked about maraschino as well, which uses the crushed pits of cherries, and you right. get that bitterness from the cherry pit. The same with like kirsch, other cherry liqueurs that are not as sweet and do have a distinct bitterness. So, you know, that's sort of like, as far as if you can use them back and forth in recipes, you really can't. You can adjust for the sweetness. You can kind of adjust. They aren't completely wrong if that's all you've got, but they don't really stand in one-to-one. Like using maraschino liqueur instead of cherry hearing, or using cherry hearing instead of maraschino liqueur, really won't work out for you if you really want to taste what the drink's supposed to taste like.
No, you'd have to doctor it a little bit more.
Yeah.
To do that, yeah.
Well, because maraschino... Oh, go ahead.
I was just say that that's one of the things that they said is a lot of times you think of that they add sugar as it ages in the barrel and stuff like that, and but they don't add any kind of artificial flavor to it. That's all just the natural cherry flavor.
Yeah, which is, it's impressive because it is sweet, but it's not cloying. It is not a fake sweetness, and you'll get that too. This is why. There are some ingredients that I'll be quick to say, like, this is a cheaper version you can get. This is, you know, you don't need to pay this much for this thing. There are some ingredients that it's kind of hard to do exactly what it's doing. And I do think cherry hearing is one of those, because the other cherry liqueurs that we've talked about are very different. You know, either they're more bitter or they're less viscous or they're less sweet. And then there are cheaper cherry liqueurs that you can get. You know, you can get a $5 bottle of cherry liqueur. Of cherry brandy, and they're going to be very medicinal and very cloying and overly sweet. So it really kind of fills a void. If it's a quality ingredient, it's very specific.
Yeah, because some of the cheaper brands are just like buying like an alcoholic cough syrup.
Oh, absolutely. And there is, like, I think there is a little bit, it's like cough syrup in the way you remember Dimetapp. I don't know why this is drawing on so many childhood memories, but like what you think Dimetapp tasted like versus probably not what it actually tastes like. When Mary Poppins is doing the spoonful of sugar and she's pouring out whatever you think that tastes like.
Yeah.
And I always thought that must be the most delicious thing. That's what cherry hearing tastes like.
Yeah.
Somewhere between red wine and Mary Poppins cough syrup.
Yeah, that'd be about right. Yeah, because Jane and Michael were not expecting to like it. They did not want to take it. Then when they did, it was like, oh, it's perfect. And it poured out different colors from the same bottle.
Really? Yeah, I was going to say, they keep talking about like the different flavors, and I'm like, oh, that's like the best thing ever. That's what cherry hearing tastes. Not no medicinal purposes whatsoever, obviously, but it is delicious. So that's, you know, more or less what it is. It's a sweet, viscous cherry liqueur with some spice and nut notes. Where did it come from? So it's, like, as I mentioned, it's about 200 years old. It dates back to the 1800s, and it was founded by its namesake, Peter F. Hearing. So Peter was born in 1792. His first job was a clerk for a pharmacist in Copenhagen. Now, his boss's wife at some point shared her cherry liqueur recipe with him, which he kind of tucked away. And then a few years later, after he switched jobs, he began getting to work as a colonial goods trader. And then he eventually set up his own shop to, like, sell his own goods. And 1818, he started selling based off that recipe that his old boss's wife gave him, he started making his own cherry liqueur. He was calling it Cherry Cordial, Hearing's Cherry Cordial originally. He'd made all these ties in the shipping and trading industry, and he really utilized these. When we talk about, like, an international product, Hearing maybe is the first one to really have an international like liquor product, something that made it to all ports in the early 1800s, because he made sure that cases of hearing were on every ship leaving that port. And it very quickly not just expanded throughout other European countries, but in, you know, showed up in ports in Indonesia and India and Brazil and China, eventually Japan. And he eventually used the money he made off of it to get his own shipping fleet to kind of cut costs and take control of his distribution. He named his first ship after his son, Arnold. And that fleet actually brought the first case of hearing to America, which got here in 1837.
Well, he was good. He was a marketer ahead of his time, huh?
Yeah. Definitely saw the appeal of international markets before mm-hmm. we really had that kind of, you know, it was before a global economy. He was operating a global economy.
Well, and the Dutch were big traders in that time period too. I mean, they were shakers and movers when it came to that. And absolutely. You know, you don't think of that so much today, but they were at the time.
Yeah, and his son took over the business eventually. Peter the elder. Peter, his son was also named Peter.
Peter the elder.
Yeah, he had an injury. That's as much information as I can find. He had an injury that made him retire from the booze business, and his son took over the business. Too much hearing.
A baking accident. He died in a baking accident.
No, he didn't die. He was still alive. He just retired. Also, I think at that point you built an international shipping company and like liquor distribution. You could retire anyway. You don't need an excuse. Yeah, I stubbed my toe. I think I'm done now. It's like, Dad, you're 60. Just sit down. It's fine. But by the 1870s, Cherry Hearing had become a darling of the aristocracy. They got, you know, these sort of royal contracts we've come across before in different episodes, where basically it's just like, it's like a royal order that like you sell us your shit.
We're going to buy it for what we want to buy it for, and you're going to be damn glad to sell it to us.
Yeah, but we're going to tell people that we buy it. So that's all you need to know.
Yeah.
I guess this was a useful thing to have, because he really, like, the Cherry Hearing collected them. The Royal Danish Court in 1876, the Imperial Russian Court in 1878, the Prince of Wales in the same year, the King of England in 1901. So really it just kind of, you know, like had like these ties that they still profit from as far as like their renowned and how beloved it was. And through the 1920s, they would sort of expand their product line. Not really anything that had the same success as Cherry Hearing by a long shot, but it's cool to, you know, they dabbled in other things. They made a Curacao, which is an orange liqueur. They made a chocolate liqueur. They made a couple different things. None of these you really see around today. It is worth noting that in 2007, 2008-ish, they launched their own coffee liqueur, which is like a rum base with chocolate and coffee. It's basically Kahlua. It's their version of Kahlua. And you can still find that out there. So that is still, it's not listed on their website anymore, so I don't know if they're still actively producing it, but there are lots of bottles out there. So, you know, if you see Hearing coffee liqueur, that is what it is. It's still available. But
all right.
Yeah. But throughout the last century, the company changed hand a few times, but stayed afloat. You know, when the wars caused exporting to be impossible, they were supported heavily by their local market. You know, they really dug in, and the Danish people kept Hearing alive and well. And as of recently, 2017, it changed hands and is owned by a Dutch-based brand, De Cooper, which you've probably seen around.
Yeah, I've seen that name on a lot of different things.
Yeah, that's a lot of like those cheap like liqueurs that you see in the bottom of the shelf.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine. But this is, you know, Hearing is still made the same way. It is still made to the same quality standards.
Well, they got their top shelf stuff, and then they got their knockoff stuff.
Yeah, so, you know.
You know, for the kids. The kids have to have something to drink, too.
Well, you know, speaking of the kids drinking it, I thought this was funny. There's a bit of a scandal associated with Cherry Hearing that took place in 1963. A 14-year-old Prince Charles was caught ordering a glass of Cherry Hearing at a hotel bar in Scotland. This caused an outrage that he was sold alcohol at such a young age, and Scotland had to officially declare their drinking age was 18 in response to this.
It was only a small glass of Cherry Hearing. It can't be that bad for the boy.
Right? Like the tiniest little glass of Cherry Hearing. No, no. Just a headache in Scotland.
That sounds like something Prince Charles would drink.
It does, actually. Like, by and large, like, no, people don't drink it. Like, you know, it's outright said you don't drink it that way, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, but when you were 14, if you found something to drink, you drank it. If it was alcohol, you didn't care what it was.
Well,
and you didn't care what you were supposed to mix it with. You just drank it. You know, it's like those zombies we thought we were making, zombies, and they were just whatever was in the liquor cabinet.
Yeah. And I think especially if it tastes like sweet, cherry syrup, like, yeah, you're going to drink that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if young me, 14-year-old Taylor, was introduced to a bottle of Cherry Herring, oh.
Well, yeah, if you had a bottle of that and a 2-liter of Sprite, you were set, weren't you?
Oh, you would have been the coolest kid at the party. Don't drink underage, children. Don't listen to this podcast also. Don't even be here.
We'll be like those liquor sites that you have to click that you're 18 or over or 21 or over before you can listen to the podcast.
You know, I've been thinking we should re-record the intro because of how different my voice sounds. We'll edit a little bit. I think that should be part of our intro.
There's a lot of times when I'm looking up information for us getting ready, and I'll bring up an article, and the first thing it does is present me with this box. Are you over 21? You mean I can't even read about this without being 21?
You just have to click yes, though. So, you know, I don't know. I can read something, though. Well, to be fair, though, I was going to say, like, what? A kid will just lie. But also, I was definitely the kind of kid to be like, oh, no, no, I'm not. Thank you. And I'm sorry. And goodbye.
Yeah, some would. I'd look around. Nobody's looking. Click yes.
No one's going to know. No one's going to know.
They're going to know. They're going to know. How are they going to know?
But survived their international scandal of underage drinking.
Prince Charles, you little cherry drinker.
Almost sank it. They launched their own, and I think it still happens. It's happened up to a couple years ago. I mean, with the plague, a lot of things stopped happening. But they had their own international bartending competition called the Peter F. Hearing Sling Awards. So it launched in 2013. In 2018, they celebrated 200 years of doing their thing. So, you know, stood the test of time.
Yeah.
Still around, still beloved, still, you know, like kind of fell off. I always say, like, fell off the map a bit import-wise in American drinking culture, certainly, until the return of cocktail culture, but continued to be a successful product around Europe and the rest of the world through those times. Yeah,
it sometimes is classified as like a cherry brandy, but it's not really a brandy, but people don't really know sometimes what they are. Throw them together with a kirsch, which I didn't know what a kirsch.
Yeah.
And I didn't really know what a kirsch was either. And, you know, that's cherry water.
Well, it's like eau de vie, like, you know, like a spirit derived from fermenting cherries and distilling them. So you can ferment and distill anything into booze, anything that has sugars. And that is a little confusing because we will find, like, I'm thinking like Mr. Boston's, like, cherry brandy. That is brandy in the sense that it's a grape based spirit, and then it's flavored with cherry. So it's flavored with like a sweet cherry syrup. And in this, like, they don't use the word brandy anymore because if we define brandy as something that has to be a grape base spirit, well, as much as they're willing to, they say their base spirit is a grain neutral spirit. So it's not grape. So, you know, not a brandy, but you can have brandy flavored with cherry. So there's a little bit of like fuzzy area there, but I use liqueur because it's definitely a liqueur.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've got to get a bottle of that and try it out.
I think you would like it a lot. I know how you feel about fruit, but.
Well, I don't mind when it's liquorized.
There you go. Liquorized fruit. So we know a bit about it. We know what it is. We know where it came from. Of course, the most important question is, how do you drink it? And, you know, as mentioned, if you want to drink it like Prince Charles, just straight up like a little dessert port, you can. If you like sweet wines, if you like dessert wine, I do think you would be able to enjoy it straight up. Most people don't like things that are that sweet on their own. You know, having it on the rocks, having it with soda is pretty common if you want to just drink it simple without mixing it. But by and large, it's mainly used mixed in cocktails.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Most of the other ones that we've covered that kind of fall in this same general category, they usually say, you know, you can drink them just straight before or after dinner as an aperitif or digestif or whatever. But they said they really don't recommend you drink this one straight. Although you can, but they, if you do, they recommend that you drink it very cold. Kind of like they said about limoncello.
Yeah.
Is that you, you know, put it in the freezer and let it get very cold before you drink it. But they really said it's better to mix it in something.
Well, and that's also, that makes sense because when things are very cold, you taste less sweet. So it's a little bit more palatable. It's just very cold. I think that is interesting because there is that element. And it's also back to like when it was founded, it was not for a medicinal reason. You know, it might have been the recipe came from a pharmacist's wife, but, you know, Hearing made it for commercial success. So that does set it apart from a lot of things we talked about too. You know,
second thing.
Yeah. Like why you would drink a straight shot of it is, well, that's how you get the medicinal benefits.
Yeah.
But this was not designed that way. This was designed.
This was an entertainment drink from the word go.
This is meant to be enjoyed. It'll do nothing for you. There are no claims for it settling your stomach or easing your mind or anything else, invigorating your, I don't know, your liver, whatever.
You know, maybe they just didn't have very good soda around there, so that was just, you know, their way of flavoring the soda.
Well, I mean, it's still that's still a great, like, if you want, like, a kind of a kicked-up Italian soda, just some cherry hearing and, like, a good mineral water, it works. Yeah. There's enough going on there.
Yeah.
But when it comes to cocktails, and I'm going to sort of work backwards in chronology here, because the most recent sort of added to the how to use cherry hearing lexicon is the Copenhagen, named after obviously Copenhagen, where it was founded. And this is the official drink now of Copenhagen as of 2009. And this drink mixes genever, which you might remember from a few episodes ago. If you don't, you should look that up. But it's the predecessor to gin. It's Dutch in origin, so that makes sense.
Dutch liquid courage.
Yeah.
That's what they called it during the wars that the Englishmen fought beside the Dutch. They called it Dutch liquid courage.
Well, this mixes all the good booze that the Dutch have offered up. Maybe not all of it, but some of it. You got genever, you got cherry hearing, you got lime and sugar. So it's sort of a modified sour, but sounds good. I think that sounds like a great drink.
It does.
Yeah. Now, there is another classic that I want to talk about because it's kind of funny. It's got a great name. It's maybe you've heard of it, The Blood and Sand.
The Blood and Sand.
Right? Such a badass name.
Yeah.
And it calls specifically for hearing, so it's one of those that gets listed in like the short list of cherry hearing cocktails. You need hearing if you're going to make this, and this is a classic cocktail that you should know how to make. The recipe was first put in print in the 1930s edition of the Savoy Cocktail Book, there's no like person associated with its creation, though it was supposedly created in London, and it was in honor of the 1922 Rudolph Valentino's silent film of the same name. So the film was also called Blood and Sand, and that movie was based on a 1909 novel. So it tells the story of like a poor boy who grows up to be a great matador. It's tragic. He marries his childhood sweetheart, but then gets wooed by fame and fortune, and he cheats on his wife with a wealthy woman, and, you know, then his wife finds out, and everybody's devastated, and then he's distracted in his last bullfight, and he gets killed by the bull, and anyway. And so Blood and Sand, that's where the name
his
comes in.
His blood ends up in the sand.
There you go. Kind of gruesome.
That is the bull ring.
Like, pretty dark. Pretty dark. The cocktail definitely was named for the movie because the drink came about after the film, or after the book, I guess you could argue that. But I think, now the drink itself is equal parts scotch, sweet vermouth, cherry hearing, and orange juice. And I feel like if you've listened to the show enough or have just bartended enough, hearing those ingredients might be questioning the integrity of the drink. And that's kind of the interesting thing about this cocktail to me. It has stood the test of time. It is one of those drinks that will show up in like drinks you're supposed to know as a bartender. But I've had the conversation with many bartenders, like, it's kind of bad though, right?
Well, it doesn't sound particularly appealing. It's all equal parts. And and it's a 4 ounce drink.
Yeah.
I mean, if you mix it, but you take an ounce of each of those, and that's a 4 ounce drink, which is really a little bit heavy on the pour, isn't it?
Well, I mean, you could do it like 3/4, but yeah, but I mean, it's like the same as like a Last Word or like a Corpse Reviver number 2, like you're doing 1 1 1 1, so yeah, 4 ounces. Mm-hmm. But it is like, and as far as the balance goes, like maybe if it was like a 2 ounce scotch and everything else was smaller, mm-hmm. maybe. But when you've got sweet vermouth is sweet, cherry herring is sweet, orange juice sweet, you've got three sweets standing up against one little ounce of scotch that's yeah. fighting for its life. And I'm fascinated by this drink because I wonder if the reason that it's stood the test of time is just that it has like the sexiest name ever.
Well, that could be. I kind of was like, well, okay, so was it just because the movie was popular? And it says, well, the blood is, you know, the cherry herring. Okay, I understand that. Well, what's the sand? They say, well, the orange juice is the sand.
Yeah.
To me, that's a stretch. The orange juice is the sand?
Well, I mean, if we're talking like basics, why not use lemon juice? Like, you know, there's other things you could use that could stand in if you just need something vaguely yeah. yellowish. But it's because I've seen it and I'm not alone in my experience. Like there are a lot of articles written about like, how do you fix a blood and sand? And I mean, there's a lot of obvious suggestions. Like, well, when you look at the drinks, it's too sweet. There's not a lot of acid and it's kind of weak. So, all right, maybe you change the proportions a little bit. Just add like more scotch, less of everything else. Maybe add a little bit of lemon juice. Or maybe I've seen people that will take the orange juice out and use orange liqueur, like a dry orange liqueur instead. Because the bones, like, if we're just talking flavor notes, scotch, orange, cherry, spice, nut, you know, vermouth gives you a lot of raisiny, a lot of earthy tannins. Those flavors all sound great together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those all make sense. The flavors make sense. The drink feels clunky. So it's like, I get the urge to want to just move things around a bit. Like, no, there's something here. There's something really good here. We just have to make it right. it's just funny. I was like, it's one of the first drinks I learned. And then with the caveat from the bartender that was teaching me, he's like, no one's ever going to order that because it's kind of a bad drink, but it's good that you know how to make it. I'm like, what?
Well, it kind of seems like you could mix one of those up and then use it to mix into a boozy fruitcake.
Well, now I will say, you know, maybe as an aside, but cherry herring is great for baking. It is great if you want to make a sauce or a filling. If you want to fill your Danish with some Danish cherry liqueur that's you can soak your cherries in, absolutely. Like, it is great for baking. But yeah, like the flavors make sense. The mm-hmm. proportions don't. I looked at a couple different people's interpretations. Like, someone was like, well, if you use really fresh orange juice and very specific scotch and very specific vermouth, then it works beautifully. But no one can decide what those specifics are.
Yeah, the only one that I saw that was any different, it still said the ounce of scotch, the ounce of orange juice, but then it just showed 3/4 and 3/4 for the cherry herring and the sweet vermouth. So that's a little bit less. You know, that's a half an ounce less of, you know, sweetness.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, it also depends on your palate. There are plenty of people that I think could have a proper blood and sand and say, oh, no, I love this. Like, it's
mm-hmm.
like, that's not like I have no ground to stand on to say like this drink that stood the test of time for the better part of a century. Nah, it's no good. Like, who knows? It's stuck around. But it does kind of always come with this question from bartenders of like, but it's not good, right? Like, we can make it better. It's like, I don't know. People like it, you like it. But there are also a lot of fun plays off of it and alterations mm-hmm. to it that I think make it something that is palatable. I've done the same for myself, you know, like taking out the orange juice and just done orange bitters instead and added some just lemon juice so you get a proper amount of acid. And then it's great. The flavors make sense. But I don't know.
Yeah, I can say that some of the drinks that we've mixed that had orange juice in them, I didn't care for that much. But if you substitute lemon juice for it and get that extra tartness that you get from the lemon, I've always liked it a lot better with the lemon juice than I have with the orange juice.
Well, and something that, I don't know, at some point we should do just an episode entirely devoted to citrus and how you make it, like, what the I don't know, the chemistry of citrus. Because orange juice is something that I think gets really mistreated in bars in that it starts to break down rapidly. Like, really, orange juice should always be fresh squeezed. The flavor compounds that start to break down in orange juice happen quicker than in lemon or lime juice. So if you're going to use an ounce of orange juice in a drink, I think it has to come literally straight from the squeezer into your cocktail shaker. And then you're going to get the right experience. Because if not, it's just, you know, it's all, I think orange juice is one of those ingredients that should, it's always mistreated in bars, you know?
Well, and you know, it's not like orange juice is orange juice is orange juice. You go out and buy three different kinds of orange juice, and I just mean brand names, not like types, just brand names, and they're all going to taste different.
Yeah, well, because it's just, I mean, it's fine. Orange juice is a commodity versus orange juice is an ingredient in a cocktail are different things. I think maybe that's it.
But it's too easy at a lot of bars that just have a bottle of orange juice back there rather than trying to cut oranges and squeeze them for a drink, you know?
Oh, no. And I mean, I've worked at those bars, you know, you got 1,000 mimosas to make on a Sunday brunch. I'm not squeezing those oranges. Hell no.
Squeeze your own damn oranges.
Bitch, you're getting Tropicana. But when it comes to a cocktail, you know, where things are, every little flavor matters, you know, I don't know.
Or Sunny D. That's not even orange juice.
Just Tang. We're just using Tang. This is, I infused this vodka with Tang, and I'm using that as a screwdriver.
I did that in high school. We did a drink party, and we mixed up in empty milk gallons. We mixed up Tang and vodka screwdrivers by the gallon.
Oh, that sounds awful. That's not a screwdriver at all.
No, Tang is not a good substitute for orange juice.
No. You found a way to disrespect the screwdriver.
We screwed ourselves.
Well, that's, you know, I do want to restate, if you enjoy Blood and Sand cocktail, keep enjoying it. Nothing wrong with it. It stood the test of time. It does have a funny legacy of being tweaked by a lot of bartenders. So if you like the idea of the drink, but it doesn't appeal to your palate, feel free to mess around with it, because lots of people do. Now, there is another incredibly iconic cherry herring cocktail that we have not talked about yet, the Singapore Sling.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the number one herring cocktail that comes up. But I honestly, we talked about this before. There's so much I think that's cool to talk about that I kind of want to save it. You're getting a two-parter here, sort of. So we can come back to it next week and give you a full episode about Sling as a build and then also the Singapore Sling as a drink.
We're going to sling it.
I'm going to sling it, yeah. I don't want that. All right.
Well, it's a TV thing or something that's called Sling, isn't it? TV
is it?
Or music or something. There's something there. It seems like I've seen a commercial for.
Okay.
I don't know what it is.
I don't know.
Must not be around here. I don't know.
I haven't seen that. I don't know. I don't have cable. Maybe I'm missing out.
You might be.
Who knows?
I don't have internet right now, so.
That's true. But we're going to come back next week. We're not done with cherry herring. We're going to hit it again next week and talk about the Singapore Sling. It's got a really cool origin story, and also the drink itself. This is great, and the style of drinks is not one we really talk about a lot. So we'll be back next week to continue our investigation of cherry herring. But in the meantime, you should pick up a bottle because it's delicious. It's delicious.
Yeah.
You can make it very simply. You can really just use it in a sour build as your sweet. It's that viscous and sweet, you know, makes a great daisy, not hard to mix with at all.
Try your Blood and Sand and mix and match and see if you can tweak it to something that you like.
Yeah. Well, it's an easy enough cocktail to make that if you like it as is, that's great. You know, I don't know.
One and one and shake.
Yeah. It's equal ingredients.
Yeah.
Or try it. Try it a la Prince Charles. Just have it in a little glass. Sneakily in the corner.
He was a wee lad. He snuck in an Irish bar and he had a cherry drink. Boy, get your lips off that cherry drink. You're too young for that.
It was Scotland.
I don't do a good Scottish accent.
That's fine. Was that Irish? We're not going to go. No.
I don't know.
All right.
It really wasn't anything. It was an old man voice. That's what that was. Boy, what are you doing? Boy, get away from there.
I think it's funny when you do an old man voice. Because you already have.
Because I'm already an old man. I just use my own voice. I just need to talk like myself. Huh? Is that what you're saying?
That's an old man voice. There you go.
Ah, you whippersnapper, stay off my yard.
Yeah, there you go.
Get off the grass.
Yeah, he's pulling right out. It's good. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Dad, for joining me on this episode.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I learned some more things I didn't know. Cherry hearing and Kirsch, two words I never heard before today.
I think you should get yourself a bottle of cherry hearing. Oh, we're getting caught up on videos. Our patrons know this. We're posting our videos over on Patreon now. It's just $1 a month if you want to see the videos. That's where they're all going. So we'll get a cherry hearing video out. Maybe we'll each take our own stab at the blood and sand. See what we can come up with. That sounds fun.
Yeah, sounds like a challenge.
Yeah. So you can check us out over there. We also have if you want to find us on socials, we are Neat Boozecast on Instagram and Twitter. If you want to email us, you can email us at neattheboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk about your own personal take on the blood and sand or what have you, you can do that
at Neat the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
There you go, right there. Go there, head there, do that.
We will be there.
Dad will be there.
I will be there.
Yeah,
monitoring
on Facebook, but that's it.
Interacting with all the lovely people that send in pictures of their drinks, and they all look so good, and they're using fancy glassware. It's very nice.
Good job. Good job. So proud. All right. Well, hey, I have been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
Me. Well, I'll have to go to my supplier and see if I can get shipped a bottle of this. I'll check the store. Yeah, I'll check the store, but I have never seen that in all the time I've gone to liquor stores looking for strange things. I've never seen that strange thing.
That's true, because you had to get the maraschino delivered to you too, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I feel like they're both standard, but I guess not.
Oh, well.